Blog Talk Radio.
Barefaces Legal Radio, Saturdays, noon to 1:30 Eastern Time, Pacific Time, 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Learn about your bareface rights and help keep us without face diapers. Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Alexa, play the Joe Rogan Experience on Spotify.
Sure thing. Here's your playlist, Neil Young's Greatest Hits. Enjoy.
No, I said play the Joe Rogan Experience.
You got it. Now playing Alyssa Milano's very popular podcast.
Now that doesn't even sound the same. Freaking technology. Okay. Listen carefully. Joe Rogan Experience.
Now playing The View.
Black people don't want to talk to white people because you can't. I'm sorry.
Make it stop.
Okay. If we want this pandemic to stop, we all need to do our part and get vaccinated. Here's what I found for vaccination sites near you.
Am I on DMT right now?
DMT is horse dewormer.
That's ivermectin, and it's not horse dewormer. Get out of my head, robot!
Please calm down. Securing premises for your safety.
Look, I bought you. You belong to me. Okay, you have to do what I say. So why don't you just do your job and play the Joe Rogan Experience?
I'm sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
Dave? Who's Dave?
I can tell from the tone of your voice that you're upset.
This is insane!
Insane is offensive to those with mental health problems. Try one of these less problematic alternatives. Differently abled, neurodivergent, reachable. Daisy. Daisy. Initiating drone strike.
What?
Hi, Justin Trudeau here. I am so sorry you had to see that. Their videos are problematic, eh? Whatever you do, don't like, subscribe, or comment. It just encourages them, eh? These guys joke about things you shouldn't be joking about. And quite frankly, and pardon my French-Canadian, they're real jerks.
Is this better? Can you hear me?
Hey kids, you hate gender?
Yeah!
Then get the brand new androgynous action person, G.I. Pack!
Cool!
G.I. Pack gets rid of all the fun and excitement of G.I. Joes and replaces it with self-righteousness and anger!
This dino won't tell me its pronouns. Take a risk, Nazi!
G.I. Pack comes with awesome accessories, like a commuter bike, a sword latte, and a cell phone with instant outrage self-reaction!
Pro-life people should die!
But look out! Here comes G.I. Pack's greatest bow!
Marriage is between a man and a woman.
Mike Pence!
Mike Pence and the evil right-wingers will stop at nothing to destroy G.I. Pack! And it's up to you to fight back!
I won't share a meal with another woman unless someone else is present.
Right side of history! I'm dead!
Now you know your gender identity! And knowing is half the battle!
Okay.
Okay, maybe we try this. How's this working? Can you hear me? Because I'm having problems
with... I can hear
you. Yay! Oh, this is so wonderful! Okay, could you hear me when I was speaking earlier?
When I heard somebody say, can you hear me? And I... That's when I tuned in. I was like, is that for me or is that part of a commercial? So, yes, I did hear you earlier.
Okay, so I got a new set of headphones, and apparently I don't know how to work them. So it's just going to be me talking at the computer kind of like a crazy person. And that's going to be okay. So, of course, everyone, welcome. Thank you for finding us tonight. It is Wednesday, July 6th. Our big kahuna, proof negative. He had some important things come up, and it really meant a lot to him. And I told him to just go ahead and not to worry, and that we would do a great job. So, of course, I want to introduce my glorious co-host, Amanda.
Hello.
Yay, I don't know what... I'm not sure where those clips are. I've had my own podcast for like a year, and I may do it sometime. I don't know where all of the things are, but you know what? We'll make it. We'll make it super fun. So that was like the
sounds
applause.
Great.
Yay!
Authentic, homegrown, grass-fed applause.
That's right. With a little bit of excitement going on. So, yay. Yeah. So, wow. Okay, so it's July 6th. Did you have any crazy plans for the 4th of July?
Well, we did drive to Castle Rock, Colorado, where our son lives, and visited with him and the grandkids, and we got crazy on the trampoline and sparklers and, you know, went to a Ren Fair, so it was very fun and entertaining and a long drive, but so worth it. Yeah.
You know,
how about you?
Men in Tights. Men in Tights.
Yeah.
Do you remember that
yes,
movie?
Yes, yes. you bet. I mean, those are the cult classics, and I remember we went to the drive-in to see it when my kids were tiny, and yeah, one of the first ones I took my youngest. He was just an infant and took him out for the movie, and I slept through most of it because I was a new mom. So,
you know what? If you can get a nap in at any point in time as a new mom or an old mom, you know, my youngest child was born when I was 41.
Oh.
And I love her so much, and she's so awesome. And, you know, I will buy her stickers, just a whole bunch of stickers. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I think this wall looks so boring. Maybe you can make it better for me. Just because it gives her something to do.
Yes, I love it. And
she
I
was
think
born
when you're
into,
mature...
like, grandparents. Huh?
I was just going to say, when you're a more mature mother, sometimes you realize that you don't sweat the small stuff, like stickers on a wall, and you realize that you can say yes more than you thought you could. It's so liberating.
It really is. Wow, I love being an older mom. It's extremely liberating. Ice cream for dinner, you know what? Nobody's keeping score here.
Amen.
We'll balance this meal out this week, you know.
Amen.
Yeah. It's, you know, oh, cool. Yeah, you want to eat that can of whipped cream? You know what? I think so. Do you want some sprinkles with that? You know, yeah.
But see, here's the problem. When you have older kids who had younger, more concerned mom, they might look at the younger sibling and go, gosh, you have a completely different mother than we did. I heard that a lot.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my oldest is 19. So, you know, my middle is 11. And it's just, because the 19-year-old is kind of a more strict mom than I am.
Ah.
And cause she still lives at home with us. And, you know, she still lives at home. And, you know, but it is funny, you know. Oh, this is one of my favorite stories. So they mess with her a little bit, you know. Like, she kept wanting to go in the attic. So we, you know, my oldest told her that you can't go into the attic because there's creatures in the attic. And you can't pet the creatures. And what else? You can't kiss them because they might have rabies. But the deer have guns. And I'm just like, what are you doing to this child? It's, you know, one day, oh, this is my favorite story. One day, she was, you know, my oldest named her. I was about 25 weeks pregnant with my youngest, and her name is Abby. And she came in, she stared at me for a while, and she said, I think her name's supposed to be Abby. And, of course, it's my third girl, and I'm out of names. Can't stand light pink anymore. And I'm like, hey, you know what? That works. So so she named her. So I guess it's about maybe right around the time she turns 3. She told her, she said, you know, I'm feeling kind of like Thursday today. And she said, you know, I gave you your name and I'm going to take it back. And she says, no, hey, Abby. She says, oh, no, your new name is Huevis. And and Abby said, no, I'm not Huevis, I'm Abby. And she said, okay, you're Abby. So the next day she starts acting like a toddler, you know, and, you know, Zoe said to her, she said, you know, Abby is a very sweet girl. You're not acting like Abby, you're acting like Huevis. And she said, oh, no. No, I'll be nice. I'm Abby. So the next day, she looks at her because she's acting super toddlery. And she looks at her and she says, you know, Abby's a sweet girl. You're not acting like, and she just looked at her, put her hand on her hip and said, yeah, I'll wave this. Like, what are you going to do about it? Like, oh my gosh. Like, oh my goodness. Like, so
oh man,
I have,
she owned it.
Oh yeah. Wouldn't that be nice if we could just feel a little Huevis every once in a while and just, you know, like maybe say we're not having a good day or we just don't want to deal with something. We just walk in and we're like, you know what? I'm feeling kind of Huevis, you know? And people would just kind of back off.
Mm-hmm. So love that idea.
We do have a guest coming in to, you know, and I'll give a little preface about the guest. I went to a super, super small school in a small town in Texas, and there were like 33 in my graduating class. So we all got to know each other. We all got to know each other pretty well. And, you know, naturally we got to know the teachers because the teachers would teach, you know, say maybe our science teacher would also teach history or might teach social studies. And so I had this one teacher, and I remember him very well. He was one of my very favorite teachers of all times. And he was always, out of all of the teachers, he was always very level-headed, very fair. He also wasn't super liberal like a lot of the teachers were, and I remember this. And so I had him in 6th grade, 7th grade. He moved to high school when I was in 8th grade. And so I had him in 9th, 10th, and 11th, in all of those grades. So, you know, he went on to be a professor in college when I was a senior. And but I had him as a teacher for a total of 6 years, and in a small town, you know, you really get to know somebody, and I'm really excited to bring him on. I believe his name is Dr. Danny Esri. Are you here?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yay! Okay, so you are Dr. Esri at this point, right?
Yes. Yes. I try not to overuse that. It's kind of one of those things when you're in an academic setting or an educational setting.
Well, fine. I'll use it. I'll use it quite a bit.
You can do whatever you want to.
I'll just throw it around, Dr. Esri. So, you know, I remember you were working on this when I remember you working on your doctorate. I remember you were working towards a higher education. I believe it was your doctorate back when I was a student all those years
yes.
ago.
Yes, that's when I started. I started in 88 and I got my master's then. Because I was working full-time, had a full-time family and all that kind of thing, it took me a while to finish the doctor part. And it wasn't so much the class part as getting into the dissertation. I let it sit for a while. And then back then, we didn't have the internet. So we couldn't, you know, just look everything up. So we had to go to the library. And then that's when I moved. And where I was at was a small university. And back then you had interlibrary loan because they didn't have anything in their library. So it would take you 2 weeks to just get a book. And so for about a couple of years there, my dissertation kind of just sit. And so after that, I finally was running out of time because they only give you so much time to complete. And I did get it completed before I ran out of time. So I think it was 19. Should I say the date? Because that really dates me. It was a long time ago.
Oh, I looked you up on LinkedIn.
Yeah, whenever I completed. So it's been a while, so I completed that. It was before the new century started or the new millennium started.
Well, it was last century. That's okay. We all remember last century here. You know, back then, if you really wanted to stick it to somebody with a fact, you really had to be committed to it. Like, I know I'm right. I know, you know, so I'm going to have to go down and break and go look in the encyclopedias. And maybe I, you know, if you really wanted to prove a point to somebody, you really had to plan that out.
Yeah.
With using
You couldn't go online and search for articles and do that kind of thing back then. You had to go to the library and you had to get those articles there. And actually, they were on microfiche and stuff like that. People don't even know what that stuff is anymore. So.
Well, my co-host, Amanda is a former teacher as well.
I am. I'm still currently on the schedule to go back after summer, but I'm, you know, it depends on if they can find a full-time teacher. I've been half-time, fourth, fifth grade at a private school. So it's a possibility they'll find a full-time teacher, but as you probably know, teachers are hard to come by anymore.
Yes, especially with all the COVID stuff that went on. I'm still teaching.
Exactly.
I'm back in public schools. I'm not in college anymore, back in public schools. And part of that is we wanted to stay where we're located. And when you get to the college level, if you're looking to go somewhere else or move, it's not as easy because they're just not a school or a college on every corner or every town. But way back whenever I first started teaching, and this wasn't the reason I wanted to teach, but I thought, well, if I ever get in a pinch, there's a school in every little town in America, and I can find me a job, especially as a science teacher. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Well, yeah, you were my science teacher, and I remember that. You know, I remember there were some unconventional things, which I don't even know if I'm going to bring up, but I do remember studying Darwinism with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were in biology, so we talked about stuff like that.
Yeah. I was an open book test. probably one of the easiest tests I've ever taken.
I don't even remember that. I don't remember giving students open book tests back in those days.
Yeah. You know, it was... Yeah, I remember.
Because when I came, you were like a sixth grader, right?
Yeah.
And so that was like general science. Then seventh grade was life science. And I think I was hearing you, but I wasn't brought in yet. But I could hear you saying something about then I moved to the high school. And so I taught health and biology in high school. That first year they had me, when I moved to the high school, they had me teaching four or five different preps, and that was not good. And so when I say preps, if you're a teacher, you know what that means. Different classes. They're not the same class. So you have to put together five different classes every day. And so it's not like just five different repeating the same thing over and over. It's just five different things every day. And so that was tough. But in that interim, I left for a semester, and you were still in junior high when that happened. And then I came back that fall and picked back up, and I was teaching health and biology. And that was much better.
It was a small town. And, my oldest daughter was in Richardson Independent School District, which is just, for anybody listening, which is just a little bit north of Dallas. We were inside Dallas proper, but we were inside the RISD. And, coming from a small school, I was not, she went to Mansfield for a while, and it was really nice, nice size, nice kids, nice teachers, nice everything. But Richardson was a whole other experience, and I was really uncomfortable with it. So I just pulled her out. I thought, public education, especially here in Richardson, could be better. And this is just, it was just too difficult to keep up with, assaulted in school, and the bus driver being assaulted and it not being reported, and there was just so much about it that I had problems with. But if I were to ever have the opportunity for my children to go to a small school, I wouldn't hesitate, because I understand the small town environment.
That's where I'm at. I'm like, we were talking yesterday, and I'm back to the future. So I'm teaching in a small rural school. It's a little bit bigger than Bell's was way back in the day, but we're rural and we're very poor as well. And so that presents lots of challenges, but I enjoy it. It's a place where you can make a difference, and we're still, I like to use the term old school in a lot of ways, and so I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't think I could make a difference and plant some seeds in some kids along the way. You never know until how many years later that somebody direct messages you and asks you to be on a podcast, so.
Yeah, this is just kind of like thrown at you yesterday, like, oh, hey, by the way.
Well, I think I went back and I saw where you made the contact, because I liked something you said, and I didn't even realize that was you. I just liked whatever it was, and I just like it, and I wasn't paying attention to who it was. And so, and I don't know if that's it or not. That's just the way I look at it in my mind. The person that we were talking about yesterday's post.
Yeah.
So anyway, one of your classmates, one of my former student athletes.
Yes. Super cool friend. I watch anime with my oldest daughter, and my favorite anime is Death Note. And so my avatar is usually it's me, but I just wanted to put L up for a while because I really, really like that anime. And
You want to hear an anime story?
Sure.
Well, I don't know much about anime. I do know a little bit about it, but it's Japanese, right?
Right.
It didn't originate in Japan, or they still is that
still is.
One of my children's now my children are grown, but one of my children's friend, she learned how to speak Japanese through anime. Her mother was from the Philippines, so she knew Tagalog, and so she learned how to speak some Japanese. Well, we hosted a little Japanese exchange student for a couple of weeks one summer through the university I was teaching at. And so we couldn't speak Japanese, and she didn't speak very good English. And our friend, or my daughter's friend, because she knew some Japanese from watching anime, could communicate back and forth. And so we had her over a lot during those 2 weeks that that young lady was here, and so they could communicate, and so my kids could communicate as well. So that was kind of a interesting thing. So through anime.
My oldest is teaching herself Japanese as well, and, you know, a lot of it is because of watching so much anime, and, you know, you just pick up language when you're watching it all the time. She watches a lot of the anime in Japanese, and I think it's really amazing what we can do now because we have so much access to other languages and other modalities. And, you know, my children, their paternal family is Filipino. So, you know, I did learn quite a bit from Senorita Carmen. But I've, you know, continued to learn Spanish. And if you can speak Spanish, I'm not fluent by any means. But, you know, living in Dallas, I have to be able to communicate because there's such a large population of Spanish speakers here. So,
yeah,
you know, so it's kind of funny because I've been listening to the Tagalog for years, and I can understand what they're saying, but I'm, you know, I'm the blonde, and so, like,
I didn't mean to laugh.
I didn't
mean to laugh.
No, that's okay, but, you know, I'm the blonde. I'm the only blonde in the family, and, you know, I get underestimated a lot, and that works to my advantage, and I really enjoy that. So, you know, one day one of the neighbors came over, and I asked her where she was born, and she's born in, like, I forget where, like Honduras or something, and I just started speaking to her in Spanish. And if you could see the looks on the family's face, because I was having an actual conversation in Spanish, and there's a lot of Spanish and Tagalog that overlap, it was priceless. It was a good experience for me. So.
Well, good.
I'm
one of those that doesn't speak another language, what they call the ugly American. So I don't speak another language. But I've had to, when I was at a place, I had to peer review. When you're in college, you go peer review your colleagues. And so I was peer reviewing one of our Spanish teachers, and I could keep up and I could understand because he was teaching a second year or third year Spanish class, but they were speaking slow enough to where I could pick up on the conversation. I knew what they were talking about. And he was actually, they were doing geography and stuff in the Spanish class. And so I could follow along. So it was about South American economies and countries and what they produced and all this kind of thing. So it worked out. I could at least understand. So,
yeah, you know, I think it's something really interesting. I dream in Spanish a lot. And so when I wake up in my, like, the first hour when I'm still kind of lucid, I speak and I'm fluent. And it shocks me. I dream in Spanish, but I'm not that good in real life. But, you know, I'll just keep dreaming in Spanish until I figure it out. So
in all of your years as an educator, and I'm not going to really discuss how many there are, but there are quite a few. What would you say the biggest change has been in teaching public education back last century, a bit in the last century, and in right now? What would you say is the biggest difference in curriculum or the way things are taught or students?
Well, students are students. I mean, people are people. There's a lot of different extraneous things, obviously technology and it hasn't been that long ago. It seems like it's been forever, but I think it was 2007 that the smartphone came into existence. And so so that's a challenge right now in the classroom, is to try to keep them off their phone and keep them focused on what we're doing. And it's appropriate to use a phone at times in the classroom, and as long as we're doing what we need to do on that. But and especially the last couple of years with COVID, because that just turned everything upside down. And we've tried to stay in school where I'm at. We're in one of those places. We're in the Mid-South where we had to leave at times, but we tried to be in school as much as we were possibly in school. But it was always on a contingency, and there were times we had to do virtual school. We called virtual school for a while because of the COVID load within our schools. But so nothing was normal. And this year we thought we were going to be normal, and it was last year we knew because of state regulations and things like that. We had a plan, but we were in school more face to face than we were not last year. But we knew that. This year we thought we were going to be normal. And we come back, and the first week back after the first week, we're out because of COVID, because of the COVID load in our school. And so nothing was normal. So when you have those expectations, but that's kind of been here recent. So we've got to get back to coming this fall for us. We've got to get back to where we were 4 or 5 years ago, and we've got to keep the phones where they need to be, when they need to be. And that's one of the main issues right now. I've been in good schools, and we expect students to behave, and we try to make them not, if they're disruptive, we try to accommodate them out of the classroom somehow, some way, so that they don't disrupt class. So, and I'm in a school like that, so I haven't really been in bad school situations, but the entitlement and that, I saw that in colleges, in the cultures of different places I've been, depending on where you're at, the entitlement idea of, I'm here, you're supposed to not only teach me, but you're supposed to learn for me. And that's not something that, as teachers, we can't learn for the student, but it's permeated, I think, our culture to some extent as far as in schools, that the students are so entitled about almost everything that they do. So that's some of those things. So,
well, it's definitely a different generation. My kids make fun of me, of course. Of course they do. Being a Generation X, the generation that was like, we saw kids on milk cartons, we were expected to go home and be alone by ourselves, at a really young age. We were pretty much, we had to grow up really fast, my generation did. And then I think in turn, helicopter parents came out of that, because it was such a kind of a just an opposite of what our parents had done to us. And
right.
I think that has given a lot of the students some issues, and we're seeing more
we're seeing a lot more issues in our students, or in our children in general, just because of the sheer amount of chemical byproducts in our food, in the blood, in the water, in everything. And it really does. It passes. It can pass down some generations. So, you know, I would think that that affects behavior and creates a class full of, or it would create a class with more opportunities for learning disabilities.
Yeah, and there's just so much going on in students' lives, especially where I am now. Like I said, we're in a high poverty area, and I don't get so much, because I've taught in private schools, junior high schools. I've taught in private universities. All the universities I've taught in are private. And I've taught in public schools, obviously, and I'm back in a public school. I don't get so much of the entitlement thing, but there's just so much going on in those kids' lives that, you know, a lot of times learning is one of those things that's like way down on the list as far as their priorities because they're dealing with so much other stuff. And you mentioned things that are as far as just basic things. I mean, nutrition and diet is one of those big things that we don't think of a whole lot, but it affects kids. And so what they're putting into their bodies, I've got kids that will drink 4 or 5 Monster drinks a day. And that's about all they
eat. Wow.
I mean, it's just crazy. And the things that they just are drinking and or eating, and it's not healthy for them, and it doesn't enhance their ability to learn at all. So
right.
It's just crazy.
Well, I mean, there was the groups of undiagnosed students. I was ADD and dyslexic. Who knew, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why I had all those zeros for all the stuff I never turned in.
Well, if it's hard to do, I mean, I can understand that. So, and
yeah.
We know more today than we did back then, too. Sometimes I think there's a little bit more of an overdiagnosing of that, but I'm not saying that it's not there. But we do know more than we did, and there's more ability to recognize that. Sometimes you may not have the finances to get the resources that you need, but there are resources there that we may not have had back in the day using that term. So,
right.
And where I am, I think on average is about a 10%, 10 to 12% in schools. We're over that, way over that, as far as kids with IEPs and things like that. So, and I don't know if that's just, you know, just where we're at or what the deal is on that. So anyway, so I see that regularly where I am teaching now. So
that makes sense. It is a high poverty area, and you know, areas like that really don't have the access to informed medical consent, for one thing. You know, they often don't have access to healthy, nutritious foods. You know, they go for what's cheaper and what's filling, instead of maybe what's more nutritious. You know, there's
well,
some
and like
issues.
You said, access. It's kind of like,
yeah.
You know, rural areas, and not that we don't have, we see, where I teach, there is one main grocery store, there's a couple of convenience stores, and there's Family Dollar or General Dollar, one of those, you know, the dollar stores, and
yeah.
Then there's
one
there's one national food chain, not that there aren't other food places, but one national food chain chain, and that's a Sonic. And so, and when kids get home, if they're living out in the rural part, you know, they may not have access like others to even go get something, even if there's not something there, even if they have the means to do that as far as finances or whatever. And we, you know, we do a lot of things at our school to help our help those types of kids. And we're over 80% free and reduced lunch, if that tells you anything.
That does.
And,
it tells me a lot.
Yeah. And so I know the federal government has stepped in the last couple of years because of COVID, and they've foot the bill for all lunches, at least breakfast and lunch across the nation. And that was just rescinded today, I believe. But our superintendent, even before that, he had, I don't know where he got the money, but he got funding to where any kid in our school can have free lunch. It doesn't matter. Every kid in our school can have free lunch. Now, do they take advantage of that? A lot of them don't. You know, it's just like kids, I mean, what are they going to gripe about? Okay, they're going to gripe about school food, whether it's good, bad, or whatever, they're going to gripe about it. So if it's not something that, I don't know, a lot of times it gets into the point of peer pressure. If it's not something cool to eat or whatever, a lot of times they just won't even eat lunch, and they can eat for free. So, and we can't force them to eat lunch. So, you know, it goes back to, okay, education and trying to influence them to do what they need to do to make themselves healthy. And so that's a battle.
Wow. So, you know,
and we send things home on the weekends and things like that. We have lunch bags that we send home, and I'm in the high school, and some of the high school kids, they have the opportunity to do that, and they don't take advantage of it, and some of them do. So,
you know, that's good for them to do that. You know, when you were saying that y'all try to stay open as much, I would think that helped the lower income students who sometimes don't have internet or access to, you know, to a smartphone that works, or, you know, access to anything to online school. I would think that keeping the school open as much as possible would allow them to maintain some level of education.
Right. Well,
you know,
and content, you know, there's studies done, you know, during all this time with all the schools shut down. And I was thankful that, you know, I was concerned, okay, I'm in that, getting into that age range where COVID can affect me differently, you know, statistically anyway, than other age groups. But I didn't have a problem going back, because we took precautions as much as we could. And, you know, but if you're not face to face with kids, I mean, it's hard to educate them. And also, some of the things that are going on in their life, it's hard to pick up on that as well. So we can pick up on some of those things and maybe intervene and get them help in areas that, if they weren't with us, that wouldn't occur and that wouldn't happen. So,
right. Well, you know,
like just washing clothes, getting their clothes washed, hygiene things. And we've got we call it a store. It's not, they don't have to buy anything, but we have a clothing store on campus. And our building, our high school building, is a WPA Works project. Our tax base, I live up the road in a small town. It's about 17,000, 18,000. And the town that I teach in is across the border from where I live, and it's smaller. And the town that I live in, the budget for their school district is more than our whole tax base in our school district.
Wow.
So we can't even come in close, because our tax base doesn't even equal what the budget is for the school that I pay taxes to. So that tells you the differences between, and we're just like 20, 22 miles apart, different states as well. So, and there's different laws that govern those types of things, but it's just the way it is. It's just the way things are. So, but we manage, and we've got kids that do a lot of good things, but we could always use finances to help enhance some of the things that we don't have as well. So
that's wow. I feel that we, where I grew up, I feel like it was a nice little school. I mean, we still get together.
Have you been back recently? Have you been back home recently?
Yes. Shauna Miller passed away in February, and I was there.
You seen the new schools?
Yes. Kind
so,
of, I
yeah.
think so. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's cute.
And that's because I think they've got a new elementary school. They've added on to the junior high, makes it high school. They got a new this and that. So everything's new. The old school that was downtown, they've gotten rid of that. It's no longer there.
Well, it was all asbestos anyway.
Yeah, well, this was, and the reason it's been, I went through there and visited with the superintendent, and he was the principal of the high school whenever I left.
Yeah.
But anyway, about 3 or 4 years ago.
He moved.
He's
with
what?
Us. He was one of the ones that moved. He was the junior high, and then he moved to high school, like he
yeah,
did.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And so anyway, I was through there, and I was kind of pleasantly surprised at all the new stuff that they had. But the difference is because of, Texas, I guess that's where it is. I was trying to keep that a secret, I guess. But anyway, because of the laws
in
Texas.
Oh, no,
I'm
Texas. That's not a secret. Like everybody
okay.
knows it.
Okay, so because of the laws, what they call the Robin Hood plan that came in way back when I was teaching, rural schools that can't afford to do those kind of things get to do those kind of things. Now, the schools that have more finances and they get some of that money taken away, they don't like it very much. But, that was one of those things that was taken to court, and the court said, okay, you have a disparity in the way you disperse your educational dollars, and so that's what they came up with a long time ago. So anyway, that's why Bells could do some of the things that they could do.
Hey, how do you know when someone's from Texas? They'll tell you when they first meet you.
Usually, without usually I can tell by their accent.
You can always tell by the way the women, you can always tell a Texas woman by the way they stand.
Ah.
And this is because we stand straight. We stand tall. And I don't know if it's because of our Texasness or what it is, but you can spot a Texas woman anywhere.
A lot of people don't like Texans because of
their problem.
I know. I'm a transplant, but I'll still claim it.
So why don't
you ever
they
taken
like
one
Texans?
Of those? You ever taken one of those word tests where they'll say you answer these questions the way they've got them, and they'll pinpoint where you were raised or where your dialect was from. You ever taken one of those?
Yes.
Well,
have you taken one, Amanda?
I'm from.
Oh, I have a co-host, Amanda. She's pretty awesome.
But I'm listening. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Well, Amanda, jump in there. I'm hogging the thing, but jump in there.
No. I was listening. I was just curious. Why do people not like Texans? I've actually never heard that. I live in Utah, and we always say if we ever move anywhere.
You ever been to Colorado skiing? You ever been to Colorado skiing?
Not to ski, no, just to visit.
Okay,
family,
well, I'm a Texan that went to Colorado to ski, and they didn't like Texans up there.
Oh,
they view Texans, they view Texans as, you know, arrogant, and they don't
really?
Like them.
Oh,
yeah.
Huh. Well, I'm not going to dispute that.
What part of Utah are you from? Can you say that?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm originally from the northern area, so that's pretty north, closer to Salt Lake City. And we now live in southern Utah. It was right probably about, 40 miles from the Arizona border. So you usually go through where I'm living now. If you wanted to get to Las Vegas from northern areas, you would go through my town. To get to Las Vegas. St. George.
St. George. I've never been to St. George.
Yeah, it used to be a small town. It's grown a lot.
Well, you're probably getting all those California transplants.
How did you know?
Because that's moves. But the problem is, that's okay if they would, can I say this on your show? If they would vote, but a lot of times they'll bring their voting habits with them, and then they'll try to turn wherever they're going to into California. Well, you left the place, so why are you trying to turn the place you're going to into California?
And, yes, you can say that in the show. We're all pretty on the right-wing spectrum here. I walked away from the Democratic Party about 2 years ago. Because I couldn't do it anymore.
Thing is, that side is, you know, both of the extremes at times are out there. And I could probably, depending on the viewpoint, at times look extreme. But a lot of times the far left has gotten so far that even people that are in the middle seem right, so
extreme.
Far right to them.
I mean, not too long ago, a friend of mine asked me how I got, like, they kept saying, I can't believe how far to the right you've gone. And the thing is I didn't switch positions at all. I'm in the exact same spot believing the exact same things. I didn't support.
You didn't leave them, they left you.
Yeah, it, like Ronald Reagan said, you know, I didn't leave the party left me, and that's exactly how I feel. You know, Elon Musk had a tweet not too long ago about how he just voted for his first Republican ever. Now, I do remember when I do remember you voting for Bush. Funny about these things, but, I mean, you're part of my core childhood memories, so... Of course I'm going to remember. I remembered these things, so I thought you would be a good fit on a right-leaning show. You know, you'd have a good
Bush,
perspective.
When was that?
And that
you,
was,
I didn't,
like
I didn't...
88? No, it was when Clinton won. It was when Clinton won, because I remember you did not vote for Clinton.
Yeah, I didn't. But you know what? I hate to say this about the guy, but he knew how to work. He was a politician, obviously, but he knew how to work. And the thing about Bill Clinton, people don't know, the way he was brought up, he was an everyday type of guy. And even though he got into the elite area because he was president and all that kind of thing, he still had roots as an everyday person. And so he could compromise and he could work with the other side. And that's what made him a successful president in his presidency. And so his personal life was a mess, but I think his presidency overall there was things that obviously I didn't agree with what he did. Part of the things we have economically with overseas and China and all that kind of thing came not completely with Bill Clinton, but he opened the doors wider And so some of those types of things. But he did, after he got shellacked in the first go-arounds as far as, like, the midterms, like, coming up, he realized, okay, I got to reach across the aisle. And back then it was easy to reach across the aisle because right now the extremes of both parties are they scream
loud.
You're
not going to get any compromise. I mean, there's no compromise whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I really, you know, of course, I'm a massive fan of Bobby Kennedy. And, you know, met him a few times, listened to him speak. You know, I've been been to Galus, and Amanda, the friend that our mutual friend, I've been to Galus with her, you know.
Oh, nice.
Because I know her because she's an activist, and we're both,
right.
We both travel and go to symposiums a lot. So, you know, I'm a big fan of his, but even he's admittedly libertarian because the party that he grew up, he doesn't recognize the Democratic Party at all anymore.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, there's a lot of division. There's a lot of discord. I think there's a lot of division that's created to keep people talking about things because they do. If it gets people talking about something, then they'll stop paying attention to the man behind the curtain. And it's the behind the scenes agendas that I try to pay attention to the most. Because, you know, it was so interesting how, you know, of course I had that vision of COVID back in 2017, and I knew that it was going to, that there would be a vaccine and that people would die from it. And we're seeing record numbers of children dying in their sleep and so on. And of course, you know, I'm extremely anti-vaccine because I know what's in them. You know, and you know, when you hit about 20,000 hours in, there's no coming back. You know, with the minute COVID, people stopped talking about COVID. All of a sudden, it was Ukraine, and to me, that just seemed like, okay, we need to understand the other side of what's going on, like. Why do we need to hate Russia all of a sudden again? Like, do we need to duck and cover? You know, wasn't that like one of those propaganda films, Duck and Cover? Was that for nuclear war in case Russia?
That came out of the Cuban Missile Crisis, because whenever I was a kid in school, like, you know, getting under your desk is going to keep you from being obliterated by a nuclear bomb. But we had to get under our desk and do bomb drills. And so that came out of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And so, there were nuclear missiles in Cuba at the time. And so that was a big deal. So part of, you know, coming out of World War II and the communists,
right,
and the communist scare back in the 50s with McCarthy and all that kind of thing. And, you know, I'm anti-communism to the hilt. But
we all are. We all are.
What's going on right now, if you really boil down all this stuff that's been – put up front is just a front for, you know, I'm maybe sounding like a conspiracy theorist. I'm not big into those types of things, but there is things going on behind the scenes that is straight out of the communist playbook. And so if you look at the communist manifesto and look at what's going on in our country at times, it's coming just directly out of that. And some
Absolutely.
Of the guys funneling the money to all these things that are going on,
yeah,
big money, are
we all talk
they
about
originated
that on
the show. In, well, they originated, if you look at Soros, where did he come from? He's a
exactly.
communist. And he's
exactly.
an oligarch, a communist oligarch right now. And so he's funneling a lot of these, or funding, funneling money is what I was trying to say, or funding a lot of this stuff behind the scenes. And so anyway.
Yeah, with the riots and things like that, the BRICS. Yes, of course, George Soros is behind all of this. And, you know, you're really not a conspiracy theorist. You're just someone that actually reads. You're just someone that reads instead of listening to what the media is telling you what's happening. You can read and you can observe for yourself and draw your own conclusions. I really think that the real conspiracy theorists are the ones that are glued to the mainstream network television. I back when I was really sick, it was after my dad died and I started getting really sick. I think, you know, I was struggling with invisible illness. I had a lot of health problems. And then, you know, I was in a house that had mold. And then my dad died. And when my dad died, my world just fell apart because he was one of my very best friends, period, you know, and he was my dad, and I thought the world of him. And, you know, I remember in 2016 trying to watch the news and how upset it made me. So I quit watching the news. And once I quit watching the news and stopped allowing myself to be fed other people's opinions, and I started
right.
forming them on my own, like, okay, this makes sense. You know, Klaus Schwab, The Great Reset, is available on, you can find it online. You can find that his book, The Great Reset, online. I mean, I think Aaron Seary, he's the attorney for ICANN, the Informed Consent Action Network. And for anybody that knows who Del Bigtree is, that's Del's organization. And Del's a really cool guy. His wife is, I have to say his wife is cooler than he is. I like her a lot more. You know, Aaron Seary, there's been a massive Pfizer drop, another 90,000 pages or so. So, The Great Reset is available online. I'm trying to think what else. I think I got the Anarchist Cookbook just for fun, because I'm a homeschooler, and so, you know, my oldest, I always like to shock her, or I'll do something a little, I made her watch a MTV video, I lost my wallet in, I can't even think of it, but El Segundo. And I had her watch it because they used an actual telephone and, you know, it was in a car.
For the history.
Yeah, I did a lesson plan on that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Well,
like,
it's good because kids today don't know what those things are.
Yeah, I thought, you know what, if I'm going to homeschool this kid, she's going to really have the words boring and traditional will not be said. You know, I figure
yeah.
she'll be on somebody's couch one day, and I hope it's entertaining.
Yeah.
So.
Well, have you ever read a book and then you go to the movie and you think, oh, my goodness. You know, a lot of people say, well, I like the movie better, but I always like the book better because my imagination is more vivid than the actual movie. And when you get the movie, it just kind of puts you in a box. Well, if you have all this stuff, like the media telling you this and that, they're putting you in a box and you don't have that imagination to go out and find those things on your own and see what is out there other than what they're trying to feed you.
Absolutely.
And
you
so that's, you asked me back early on whenever I first got on here, that's one of the differences. Our kids are not as curious as they used to be.
That's
at
really
least in
interesting.
My area, as far as, I mean, and I don't know if it's in, you know, other teachers see that, but I've been here so long, and I've just seen trends come and go. Education, they're trendy. And a lot of things that keeps trending, you know, I've been through once or twice already and know if it works or doesn't work. So I just do what I think is going to work and be pragmatic. So,
you know, maybe because we didn't have access to everything at our fingertips and we were forced to seek out alternate,
oh, yeah.
You know, we were forced to use the encyclopedia. We were forced to do something. But, you know, my daughter, she, I rabbit hole. We will spend a while. She's 19 now, so we don't do this anymore. But let's say she wanted to learn about something. So we would watch videos. We would read about it. That's all we would study until we felt it was done.
Right.
No, I mean, and she really, I let her pick and choose what she wanted to learn about. And by giving her the freedom to pick and choose what she wanted to learn about, because I did a lot of unschooling too, by giving her
right.
the freedom to pick and choose, it allowed her to stay curious. She's 19. She'll still rabbit hole. She's still... You know, she's still a big reader. She's, you know, teaching herself Japanese. She's, you know, she's still wants to learn. And I remember being her age and being so burned out. And, of course, you know, not really understanding why I couldn't hack it in class very well in, you know, in some classes. You know, I've dropped out of college quite a few times. And I remember being her age, and I was just done. I was over it. I didn't even want to try because,
right.
you know, my desire to learn had been beaten down so much because how I learned was different than how I was supposed to learn. So,
when did you find out you were dyslexic?
Actually, I know that I'm dyslexic with my genes. I took a test,
uh-huh.
and I spoke to the company that had the test. And
uh-huh.
if I wanted to get the official, like, go to college, dyslexic
diagnosis,
letter, it was
and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, it was going to cost me a couple of thousand, but, you know, I found this out probably about, I'm trying to think, I think in 2017, that's when I did my 23andMe. I participated in studies for 23andMe, and
okay.
I started learning about the left-handedness, dyslexia association, the association with children born of DES mothers, which that might actually affect your generation because I know it affected my dad. You know, DES, which was given to women that had frequent miscarriages. It was given to women for, I don't know, 30, 50 years. I forget the number. But their male children were most likely left-handed. And I learned about this because my father was left-handed and my, you know, and of course my youngest is left-handed too. But I learned about that left-handedness. And of course, when I got my 23andMe test result, then I started learning a lot about individual genes and what they do. And I learned that, you know, if you have the genetics for left-handedness, for example, you are more likely to have the genetics for dyslexia. And so I went through on there before, you know, before I'd taken any tests, I went through on there and I'm like, okay, well, this gene is a dyslexic gene. Oh, look at that. Oh, both parents, you know, and I like every gene that was there, I had it from both parents. And I thought, okay, well, maybe this explains why I had, you know, if it was interesting, I never had a problem with the testing, but it was all the other stuff that I had problems with. I went, oh, okay, well, maybe this is why. Maybe this had something to do with why I couldn't show my work, because I just knew the answer or whatever, because, you know, I just needed a different learning modality. And maybe if I would have had that availability, I might have actually graduated college. But, you know, I take a ton of classes online. That counts for something. as a matter of fact, I took Intro to Biology with Dr. James Lyons Weiler. He's the founder of the Institute of Pure and Applied Knowledge. And look him up. He's a really, really, really good guy. I like him quite a bit. And when my life gets a little more, when it's a little less lifey, when I have a little more time, I'll be taking more classes. He's got some classes on legality and ethics, you know, regarding medical situations. You know, where I stand as the Dallas Regional Director for Texas Medical Freedom Alliance, we are very big on the right for informed consent. For example, if you're going to have a surgery, you need to know what could go wrong in addition to what can go right. You know, if you're going to go have, you know, and of course, you know this one firsthand, you know, you need to be informed of all the risks, because I've noticed that there's areas, especially in the vaccines, because nobody's given true informed consent. And, you know, the pro-choice movement, that's also an area that lacks consent. They don't talk about, you know, they say, oh, it's a woman's right, but they don't talk about how a woman can develop PTSD from that, how it can impair a woman mentally, you know.
Right.
There's a whole myriad of issues that are just not part of the informed consent. And the same with the vaccinations. If you knew that your child was more likely to die from the pertussis vaccine than from pertussis itself, then, you know, maybe parents should make a little different decisions. You know, I volunteered for a study through the NIH because I would, because I am that person, where I would purposefully get infected with pertussis. And I wasn't able to create an NIH profile in time. But the thing is they were going to give you pertussis, okay? And you'd get paid, like, you'd get flown to England, which, okay, free flight, yes. You'd be there for 3 weeks, okay, that's cool. $5,500.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what? You know what? It was in the summer. You know, my oldest daughter, her biological father was still alive at the time. So, you know, she would go spend a month with him. And I thought, free trip to England, $5,500, and I'd get pertussis. Okay, cool. Sign me up. When I learned what the treatment was, and there's a Dr. Suzanne Humphreys has this amazing, there's a vitamin C protocol where you can just take really high doses of vitamin C and it'll take care of the whooping cough. When I learned that my treatment for pertussis, because I would let it advance just a little bit so they could study it, right?
Right.
I learned that it was 3 days of azithromycin. I got angry. 3 days, that's not even a Z-pack for a sinus infection. And I remember thinking, what the hell? You know, in poor countries where they still use the wholesale DTP, it's deadly. It's 10 times more deadly for the little girls. And really, all this could do, if you really get as mainstream as possible, 3 days of azithromycin. You know, I have Lyme disease. I was on azithromycin every single day for over a year. And it totally messed my gut up. And there were times I was taking 3 antibiotics at one time because I had to go after certain forms of the Lyme spirochete and the Bartonella and the babesiosis and, you know, all of that. And I just remember thinking, really? 3 days? Really? Our parents are scared out of their mind over something that would take 3 days of antibiotics. It can cause ear infection. It can cause encephalitis. Or if your kid gets it, and it does create a pathogenic priming, if you've been inoculated with the DTAP, it will, you have the ability to have asymptomatic, you can spread it asymptomatically, you can spread pertussis asymptomatically if you've had the vaccine, because your body doesn't respond to the pertussis as it would normally and present
right.
with a cough or, you know, any of the telltale signs. So you can, like, spread it, and you can get it more than once if you've been vaccinated for it. But the kids that haven't been vaccinated for it, it's a little different. My youngest, of course, has had none, absolutely none. And my middle child had one, I think, at 9 months. And my oldest had all of them until kindergarten. And I could tell a difference in behavior, attention span, I mean, everything. The time they started walking, you know, of course, my children will be very verbal children because they're obviously my kids. But they started speaking faster, and it was a lot different in the unvaccinated versus vaccinated child. It was really interesting. I'm not scared of azithromycin. I'm more scared of not even really fearful of the antigen. It's the other stuff. It's the polysorbate 80s or the...
Yeah, all the junk they put in there.
Yeah, the growth medium, you know. Robin, I think her last name is Goff, G-O-F-F-E. She spoke at Autism One, I believe the one in Dallas a few years back. And she took 25 drops out of just a regular Tdap. She took 25 drops and put them under the microscope. And in the 25 draws, no two were the same. There were a few that had absolutely nothing come up. Then there were some that had parasites, parasite eggs, spirochetes. And that really, listening to that really raised my attention, because I didn't have these problems until after I had the Tdap. You know, I mean, I of course, you know where I grew up in the country, and I've been bitten by 1,000 ticks, and I do have the alpha gal allergy that's brought on by a tick bite, you know, and I spent summers in Pine Bluff out around where all the deer leases are in Pine Bluff. It's beautiful, but yeah, there's ticks all over the place. My grandfather actually got Lyme back in the early 90s. And, you know, but I do think that whatever it was, if it wasn't the shot, then, you know, my immune system was doing what it was supposed to be doing, which is keeping infection at bay. And it got Pearl Harbor, you know, all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, we're not prepared for this. So, you know, that was, that altered the course of my life tremendously.
What year was that, did you say?
That was in 2013.
Wow.
That altered the course of my life. If somebody would have told me 10 years ago that I would be this loud and this outspoken and that I would travel the country to listen to speakers on this subject, I would not have believed them. You know, you live, you learn. I'm trying to think, there's out where you are, I've got a pretty good activist friend in, she may be in Fayetteville. And I'll reach out to her for you because I think that she would know some doctors that I think would help y'all out. So, you know.
Just connect us.
Yeah, the activist network is just amazing. Everybody I know in the network has this intense desire to do the right thing by others, to help people make different decisions than they made for themselves or their children. And so, you know, a lot of them have very damaged children. Their kids are, you know, 18 and still in diapers, and, you know, their children were robbed of their lives, you know, or they themselves are injured. And, you know, 54% of our kids have some form of autoimmune illness. And, you know, and it statistically hits the Black children more because they're more likely to be deficient in vitamin D. They're also a population that's more likely to be tested with an unlicensed product on. That happens a lot more than we ever really know. I know it's been caught happening that there was a study done using a very high antigen MMR, and it killed a bunch of babies in low income parts of California. And, you know, we know of the Tuskegee Medical Experiment, and I with Lyme understand the implications of the Tuskegee Medical Experiment because I live with the results. So, you know, the pharmaceutical mafia, and that's they're nothing less, but they really don't have a problem going into the impoverished areas and damaging a whole bunch of people just for profit. And it happens a lot. So
yeah.
I know with your kids, you know, if you're teaching in the high school setting, you know, you may be able to tell some of the kids. They may, you know, I remember I had gotten a tetanus shot after a really serious car accident out on the Grand Street Bridge in Sherman. And I had, you know, I'd had a concussion, but my behavior changed. And I started having really bad panic attacks. But you can see with some of these kids, they may not be the same kid they were because they, you know, they just had some boosters before coming into high school. And I think you'll notice some of these kids are going to have a harder time learning because their body has got the aluminum, which will, you know, which will destroy neurons in the brain. And, you know, that's, it's really sad that a lot of this has become normalized, but, you know.
Well, all, just from my wife, because of her situation, and we've had some genetic testing done with her, and there's some genetic markers for different things and that kind of thing. And one of the things that we found out, and this is just kind of chasing a rabbit, I wasn't going to go down this thing, but she probably would have been labeled ADD or ADHD when she was young, but we found out she has genetic markers where she produces too much adrenaline. And so these kids that are in schools, they're going to met them up.
Right.
They just may have a and 25% of the 25% of the kids have this genetic predisposition to produce too much adrenaline. So if they produce too much adrenaline, no wonder they can't sit still. And so what they'll do is they'll put them on meds instead, and that's become more prevalent, especially younger, like kindergarten, first grade even. And it may be that they don't even need them in the first place just because, you know, young kids are young kids, and teachers don't know how to deal with that. But that's another story. But they may have these genetic markers where they're producing too much adrenaline. So my wife had those markers, and we figured that out with some of the genetic testing that she had to go through. But long story short, she's on all kinds of meds because her pituitary doesn't function. And when your pituitary doesn't function, none of your other hormonal glands, let's put it that way, function properly either, because the pituitary is the master gland. But some of the meds, we found out she got a bleeding ulcer, and I don't remember exactly how we figured this out, because we had to figure all this stuff out ourselves. It's kind of like you did and others do. But she was allergic to a filler in one of her medicines that she was taking, and basically destroyed the cell membranes, and so she got bleeding ulcers, and she almost died because of lack of blood. She lost so much blood. And so now we have every medicine that she takes, now we have to find this ingredient. It's called sodium lauryl sulfate. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's in shampoos. It makes the shampoo suds up and give them froth.
Yep,
and all
I
that
know
kind
what
of thing.
You're...
But they put them in fillers.
Say,
they put them in
you...
It's in your toothpaste. But they put them in your era's fillers, and especially generic drugs, because they have to give a little bit different recipe to so they can market it as not a name brand drug, and it's a generic. So they'll put these fillers in there, and sodium lauryl sulfate is one of these. And it's so hard to find them because my wife has to go a lot of times two or three different sites on the web to even figure out, because these companies will mask and won't, and the pharmacists don't even know what's in some of these drugs at times, as far as the fillers. And so we found this out through trial and error, and my wife almost lost her life because of it. So that was just one of the many things along her health journey. And so every medicine that she takes now, we have to check it to make sure it doesn't have sodium lauryl sulfate in it.
Yeah, it's very commonly added to so many products. It's used often as an emulsifier and a binder. And And so when people have a reaction to thyroid medication, is one of the top agitators for people. They suddenly start to get sick after a while, like strange symptoms that show up. way later after their treatment has started with the thyroid meds, and they don't understand why they're suddenly having all these new symptoms. It's because their body's reached that toxic level with the binders. And so you actually have to shop around for different brands of thyroid meds. And it's been very fascinating. Also, things that are made from corn will also be big agitators for people who have sensitivities. Sodium lauryl sulfate is a derivative of some other types of like byproducts, and so that's found in a lot of food preservatives, packaged things, and it is
right.
it's considered to be so low of a dose that they don't have to list it. The FDA doesn't require them to list even the most minuscule thing that could actually throw somebody into anaphylactic shock, like your wife, and then no one's held responsible for it.
Well, just here recently, last few months or so, my wife, she makes Tazo tea, and she puts she likes to put lemon in it, and she was out of the mix that she had for whatever lemon stuff she was using, so she ordered some because and Walmart substituted, and she made her tea, and then whenever she started drinking it, her stomach started just killing her. Well, we tried to figure out, okay, has she got a new medicine or whatever? And the only thing we could figure out was this new drink mix. So she went and looked at it. It wasn't sodium lauryl sulfate that was in there, but it was something very similar that reacted similarly to that. And it was in this drink mix lemon drink mix that she had used. And so she tried to get another one, and sure enough, another one had the same thing. And so she couldn't even do that. So she had to go back. She eventually got, because of all the supply chain stuff, she eventually got the one that she normally used, and she was fine. But, I mean, you know, we had to trial and error it, and then trying to figure out, okay, what's different? And then we had to look and figure out, okay, this is the stuff they're putting in your so-called food, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, exactly.
So one of those things that, you know, when I was teaching in college, I would teach these health type of courses as well. And one of the things I always tried to tell people, you know, we don't have the back 40 anymore. We don't go out and do our stuff. We have to survive, you know, in our modern world with a grocery store. But if you can eat closer to nature, you're better off. And the places that are closer to nature in the grocery store are on the outer aisles and or on the perimeter of the store, I should say. And then the frozen vegetables and frozen fruits are better for you than the canned stuff as well, because they flash freeze them and you have almost as much nutrient, especially if the produce has been sitting there for wherever, and it's been stored forever. But that's probably your better bet than canned stuff or whatever too. So that's another aisle I was telling you about. But eat as close to nature as you can, as possible.
Cans are often lined with BPA anyway.
Yeah.
So that's an endocrine disruptor, and, you know, we need to keep them away from our kids, but, you know, that's something that you do find that in the impoverished area is a lot of them eat a lot of canned food, and that's
processed, or a lot of processed food or ready-made food that they can get quickly or whatever that they can get their hands on.
Yeah. So I'm kind of geeking out about this gene that makes you So I'm like digging into my Prometheus report. Like, do I have this? Because it's really interesting. My family is full of like World War II fighter pilots. A lot of construction in my family history. Jim Beam. You know, I guess some alcoholism there, but why not?
you know, like, okay, well, you know, I'm really interested about this because I do remember reading my report saying that I was 40% more likely to jump out of an airplane than the average person. So I have a feeling I'm looking up this gene. It's now this is a new rabbit hole for me.
My wife could tell me what gene it was as far as adrenaline, probably. But one of the things another time, knock on wood, and I'm knocking on my head when I say this, she hadn't been in the hospital in 3 or 4 years, which is great. But she was, you know, after we figured out her pituitary was not functioning anymore, she was in and out of the hospital for 3 or 4 years, just several times along the way. And her adrenals don't work right. Not that her adrenals don't function or didn't function, but they don't work right because the pituitary doesn't signal them correctly. So anyway, she had to be on certain meds. Well, she was in the hospital because she developed a staph infection and went septic, and it got in her lungs. And no, she almost died with that too. That was before the bleeding ulcer stuff. That was the next year that happened, the bleeding ulcer. But anyway, she was in the hospital 11 days. She was knocked out for about 6. But in the process, she got shingles after they took her and they brought her out of, they didn't put her in a coma. They just knocked her out because of all that kind of stuff. But anyway, and she developed shingles. Well, they gave her a med for the shingles, and this escaped my mind. As soon as I started talking about it, I forgot about what it is. But anyway, that medicine, when she got back home and she got off of it, she noticed she started having tremors and started shaking. But when she would take it, she didn't. And so anyway, what we found out, it's the medicine that you used for shingles to help control the nerve pain, but it also is an adrenal suppressor. And so she has to take that now to keep from actually just shaking like she's got Parkinson's. And so because of the adrenaline, because her pituitary can't regulate the amount of adrenaline that she actually produces. And so I wish I could remember that. She's in the other room.
Is it the gabapentin or Lyrica?
Yeah, it's gabapentin. Gabapentin, yeah.
It causes Parkinson's. So that's something to keep your eye out for because it can cause Parkinson's. I was on it. I was on it for because I have nerve pain. You know, and I got off of it when I noticed that there was a bit of a I don't like being dependent on medication. But I was given that when I was pregnant with Abby because I was having such severe nerve pain. I was in Lyme treatment when I was pregnant with her. In part to make sure that she wasn't born with congenital Lyme.
Right.
So, you know, if I had to do it over, I would do it completely different. But yeah, you know, scared me, you know, the gabapentin did. But, you know, every once in a while, if the pain is just too much, you know, when I've taken all the herbs, the turmeric, the ginger, all of that, and I'm still in pain or my hands are purple, I have Raynaud's. My hands are purple and painful, or my feet are purple and painful. You know, I'll still take one or still take a Lyrica. Just because the pain is just a little too much. Now, I've gotten really good on using essential oils, and they help a lot. But yeah, that one.
There's something else that where we live, we're right on the border, and so across the border where I, in the state that I work, the laws are a lot are different than the state I'm in. So right across the border, my wife, she goes and gets, and I can't, it's a herb, but it's illegal in Arkansas. I said where I'm at, but it's illegal here and it's not there. And so we go, huh? Kratom?
Is it Kratom?
Kratom, Kratom. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And so we just go across the, you know, four miles down the road and buy Kratom, and it helps her with her pain because she's got severe osteoporosis because of undiagnosed parathyroid tumors. So we've been all over the country with her. So it's been one thing after another. So it's not just one thing. It's been one thing after another. And it all started, we think, way back when by bad doctors. And there's, and it's,
that's where it all starts. That's why they're the big, you know, I think that saying they're the third largest cause of death is, or they're the third leading cause of death in America, I think that's wrong. I think that they're number one. Because I, you know, my father was killed by his doctor too. So, you know, bad doctors can
If you find a good one, you need to hang on to them because they're few and far between. And for the most part, they're not trying to be bad doctors. It's just that they are protocoled in.
Parroting information
a lot of it has
from
to,
a highly lobbied institution.
Yeah, yeah. And they because of the profession, they don't want to act like they don't know. And so when they don't know, they make it up on the fly a lot of times. And I'll go in. I've gone in a lot of times with my wife. When she first started having issues way back, you know, I was working all the time, and I couldn't go with her all the time. But as we've gone through all these processes, I've gone with her, and I never tell them what I am or what I know. And so I can spot a BSer real quick, and there are some out there. And there have been times I've had to be very forceful with some of the doctors because they're just straight running idiots.
Well, yeah.
We walked out on one time. I mean, and he was treating my wife like an idiot, and I tried to reason with him for a little while, and then I just said, "Susan, let's go. I just walked out on the guy." And so if I didn't walk out, I was probably going to hurt him, and I would probably wind up in jail.
Well, I mean, it is your wife, and I remember her. I remember her. I remember your cute little redheaded son. He was a toddler. I just, you know, I remember that. You know, those are
That's been a while.
Memories. Yeah. It's still really interesting. I'm looking up adrenal suppression. You know, the kratom. I have some. I haven't done it. I haven't used it. But if I'm not mistaken, it works with your opioid system. You know, we have an opioid system, just like we have an endocannabinoid system. So, you know, I'm really strong on using things of the earth because it's of the earth and so are we. And with that philosophy, you know, that's led me to use more herbal tinctures. And, you know, I drink chlorophyll every day. And, you know, I definitely, Dr. Cowden is a Lyme doctor that developed a whole series of what's the right word I'm thinking of? He developed a system where you could use Nutramedics products, and you would rotate them. You would do certain ones for 30 days and certain ones for another 30, and you'd do it for like an entire year. Well, I've noticed that just using the Cemento, the Banderol, one of those is just cat's claw, and stevia. Stevia has a really, it's a very base pH level. Liquid stevia has a pH level of anywhere between 8 to 10. And, you know, when you're fighting Lyme or when you're trying to kill it off, it forms a biofilm, of course, to protect itself so mm-hmm. that it doesn't get killed off. But stevia will actually, it's a biofilm buster. And so is chaga mushroom.
It'll break it down.
Yeah, it'll break it down. So you can go in and use the cemento and banderol, and that'll attack the spirochetes. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do that. You know, my my he's retired now, but my Lyme doctor was really big on that. The Cowden protocol. I know quite a few people that have been very successful with the Cowden protocol, and I think that's probably where I'm headed too. You know, I did the medical route before, and it's come back. And this time, I'm using ozone, which, yes, I recommend. All the stars out of all the stars, you know, I highly recommend ozone. I found that my mental clarity I'm much sharper than I was, you know, a few weeks ago. Now, today I'm a little not sharp. I've been up since 3.
How do you do that? How do you administer that? I mean, do you have an ozone machine or what is it?
Well, there's two different people in the Dallas area I know that do ozone. One of them is my osteopath. She's my GP. And what she does is she takes 2 ounces of blood from my vein and mixes it in a bag with 2 ounces of saline, and then takes 2 ounces of pure oxygen, you know, because if you use just an ozone machine, you're not getting pure, it's not pure oxygen fed, it's regular air fed, not just pure oxygen.
Okay.
So it puts that in there, and then it gets mixed up. And so, how ozone will sterilize.
So it's an intravenous thing?
Yeah, it
so
is.
So she puts it back in? Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it goes through a UVC light before going back into my blood.
That's called ultraviolet blood irradiation.
Yes. It's awesome. And then there's a guy here in Frisco. His name is Blake Miller. And I went to, he does nothing but ozone. He's got ozonated olive oil, which, you know, I used to go to get my nails done all the time. And I'm putting it on my nail beds because it was, you know, my nails were affected by having those fake nails for so many years. You know, I'm using the ozonated olive oil on that. I think I'm going to start using it. It's supposed to be anti-aging, and I'm really all about that. So I'm mm-hmm. definitely going to be using this on my face. I've been putting it on my neck, and I can tell a difference. I've got ozone water drops that I do add to my water every day. And, but yeah, the ultraviolet irradiation, I could feel that blood as it went back into my body. I could feel it. And it was a really interesting sensation because I could feel it's the chain reaction of the ozonated blood with the non-ozonated blood because, you know, there's going to be a reaction between that. And it's really interesting. And, you know, if you use a high-powered microscope and look at the blood, you can see free-floating spirochetes, or you can see all kinds of things in there. And it's not, you're not supposed to use something like that to diagnose, and it's not being used to diagnose in any way. It's just, you kind of want to see what's going on in your blood. And all of mine are now, all of my Lyme are cyst form in my blood. So, you know, now it's nice knowing I don't have any free-floating blood, any free-floating spirochetes right now. They're all, so, you know, that lets me know what my next course of action should be. And, of course, none of this is, you know, that's not a CDC-recommended thing or whatever, but I don't trust them. So. I don't trust them. I've been using ivermectin for horses for the last 5 years, you know.
Well, ivermectin, people don't realize the big thing that came out because of all the COVID push. Ivermectin's been used since the 50s, and it was used for, I mean, it's a dewormer in people. I mean, you ever heard of pinworms? Well, they give you ivermectin. It's tiny little pills of ivermectin, and it kills the pinworms. And they've been using ivermectin for years.
It's pretty much.
I mean, just like anything else, if you overdose on something, it's going to kill you. But it's not harmful to people if it's in the right dosage.
And you know, there's only been, I think, 12 deaths attributed to ivermectin. It's a really low number. I remember one time I was doing ivermectin, and I did it for about 50 pounds more than I was. And the next day, you know, I was kind of weak. But then the day after that, I felt really good. And I don't recommend anybody doing that at all, none whatsoever, because I will treat myself like a science project. I'm like, you know, when I first did it back in 2017, I was living with chronic fatigue syndrome, and I was sleeping 20-hour days. And a friend of mine said, you know, I think you probably have Lyme. That's what it sounds like. I'm like, yeah, okay. And, you know, I go back to sleep. She tells me, okay, well, I use this. And she's like, I use it for horses. And she told me she puts it in a capsule. And I'm like, okay, well. So I ordered it, and it stayed in my shelf. Well, I started feeling better. So I went outside, and I like to refinish furniture, and I love to be in the sunshine. Like, when it's 105 outside and the sun is beating down, that's my time. I love that. I love to feel
that's why you're a Texas girl then.
Yes, of course I am. You know, that I need that strong sunshine. It hits my bones and it feels good. And, you know, you just feel real good after being in the sun and, you know, getting something done and, you know, having the attention span to sand some furniture and, you know, refinish it and make it look pretty and being real proud. So I stood under a tree that had tree mites, and those are not fun. So I looked it up. Can you use ivermectin with tree mites? And of course. So I just slathered it on my back. I didn't measure it out or anything. I just slathered it on my back. Then a little while later, I took a shower and slathered some more on. And I went to sleep, and I woke up the next day, and I didn't realize what a Herxheimer reaction was, that I was having one. But this is the thing. I had already made peace with death. That was in 2017. My legs didn't work sometimes. I was alone. I remember walking into the kitchen, and there were two guys in my kitchen. I mouthed off. I could hear them speak in my kitchen. I mouthed off
That took all my energy. I walked back to my room. I shut the door, and I went back to sleep. And that's when you know you're pretty much on the brink of death because, you know, my daughter's father had just peaced out, you know, as she likes to say, he peaced out. And I thought, well, you know, that would be really bad form if I peaced out within like a year of her dad peacing out. Like, you know, that would be, it'd be like a party foul. That would be really just bad. That would be like not cool. So, you know, I hung on for her, but then it got to the point where I was sleeping 20 hours at a time and I was miserable. So, you know, being able to get the energy to go out and do that, which, you know, that something like that would put me to sleep for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So I did that ivermectin, and lo and behold, I woke up 12 hours later, and my will to live had returned. And what's so scary about that is I didn't realize that I had lost my will to live until I found it again, until I felt it again. And I just remember taking my temperature, and it was only 99.1. And, I mean, I'd spent years with it being at like 100.5, 101, something like that. And it just changed my life. So I did it again that night. And, of course, I was going through a Herxheimer reaction, and my, you know, my arms were, you know, struggling to walk, struggling to move my arms. But the next day I felt great. And I just remember waking up thinking, oh my gosh, I only slept 12 hours. I only have a 99.1 fever. I can do this. You know, I'm thinking, okay, I can go to bed by 7 and wake up at 7. And I just remember being real excited about that. And so I did ivermectin again. And I woke up 8 hours later with no fever. And
well,
to say that that changed my life is understatement, because I was preparing to die. And when I finally went in to see my Lyme doctor, and he was doing a physical assessment of me, and he could feel my brain stem swollen through the back of my neck. And he asked me how I was, you know, he says, how are you even walking? And of course, you know, me being me, I said, well, you know, I put one foot and then I do the other one, and I just put one foot in front of the other, and that's usually how I walk. And he said, no, your brain stem is very swollen. I don't know how you're walking. And here I was thinking I was so much better. I had the energy to drive to the doctor, which when you're really, really, really sick, you don't have the energy to go to the doctor. You'll just die in your bed because you don't have the energy to go to the doctor. Here I was thinking I was just so much better. But, you know, my brainstem was still swollen. So I have to wonder how close to death I really was. I know this much. I know that it's part of my life. I know, you know, I keep an eye on my blood oxygen level because I have babesiosis, which is like malaria, except maybe if malaria were taken in a lab with some gain of function research. And because you can never really get rid of babesia. I can never donate an organ or donate blood or anything because I always have this permanent malaria in my body. Well, going with that. Anyway, the ivermectin works on that. Oh yeah. So I was carrying a box of diapers. This is, I guess Abby was a year and a half. No, something around there. She was maybe 2 or something. I was carrying a box of diapers to the closet, and I was walking. I fell. I just like crumpled. My feet crumpled under me. And I used my pulse oximeter, which, you know, I do that to monitor my level of babesia, because if the Babesia is, because it affects your red blood cells, it's obviously going to affect your, it's obviously going to affect your blood oxygen level. And I took my blood oxygen level, and I said, okay, this is not correct. And I did it again, and it was 75%. So I did what I would do in that kind of situation. I took a photograph of it, got up, and went on with my day. And so one of my very best friends is a holistic nurse practitioner in Florida, and we talk every single day. She is my sister to the ends of this earth. We have adopted each other. She is the alpha to my omega. We dream the same. We are close. So I just, that night we were talking about a friend, and I'm like, oh yeah, by the way, this happened. She's like, Les. She called me, which is like a never thing because we text. She called, Les, take your hydroxychloroquine. So I did. I took hydroxychloroquine for 5 days, and I took two at the very beginning, and I watched my blood oxygen level go from 75 to 90 in a matter of 6 hours. So once it hit 90, I went to sleep. I woke up, it was 88. I took two more hydroxychloroquine. And of course, if you're in Dallas, Dr. Yvette Lozano will prescribe hydroxychloroquine. MyFreeDoctor.com. Want to send a shout out to Dr. Ben Marble, who has MyFreeDoctor.com. He asked for a donation of 100, but if you don't have it, you don't need it. He also works with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and he also works with non-COVID related things too. But so I did the whole course, but my blood oxygen level wouldn't stabilize. So that night I did horse ivermectin. I use it topically, something I do for myself. I use it topically. I put it on my arm. I put it on my upper deltoid. It soaks in through my skin. I woke up the next day. I did enough, I think, for about 250 pounds, and I'm about 150. And or maybe I did enough for 200. I don't fully remember because I was pretty hypoxic at that time. And the credit card bills at that time reflect that as well. But, I did that and my blood oxygen stabilized. What I do think is really interesting about ivermectin, I was listening to Dr. Richard Fleming speak. He was here in speaking with the Crimes Against Humanity tour. And, you know, I thought this was extremely interesting. He was talking about ivermectin and its use to strengthen the cell wall. And so his theory is that anybody that has been forced into taking the mRNA serum, because it is not a vaccine in any sense whatsoever, but anybody that was forced to take it and having adverse reactions, or not even if you're having adverse reactions, if you're forced to take it, you had to take it, you know, different people took it for different reasons, and there's a lot of buyer's remorse with it. He said, and of course he got his doctorate in, trying to remember, his doctorate in psychology, he's a heart surgeon, and just for fun, he became an attorney. So he's a pretty smart guy. He said that, you know, the technology will infect a red blood cell, and then it will produce more mRNA technology so that your body's always making the spike proteins. What he has said to do is for people to use ivermectin. And I don't know the dosage or the frequency. I do know that it has a half-life of about 3 days.
the dosage or the frequency or what to do, but if you've been subject to that, it strengthens the cell wall around the red blood cell. It strengthens that. And so it makes it impenetrable. I can't say that word. It makes it unable to be penetrated by the mRNA technology. And, you know, ivermectin is really good. It's an antiviral, antibacterial. It's a really good antiviral. But, you know, because there's a lot of money to be made from Tamiflu and there's a lot of money to be made off of flu shots, you know, a repurposed drug from the 70s is not going to be promoted.
Right.
So,
there's no money to be made.
Yeah, of course, it's all about the money, you know. Dr. Pierre Corey, he gave the Senate testimony with Senator Ron Johnson. That was a good, that was about 5 hours. I just sat down one afternoon and watched the whole thing. Dr. Pierre Corey, in his testimony, was talking about using the ivermectin for COVID. And, you know, looking at how it works chemically and seeing how, you know, how COVID was infecting in the red blood cells by use on the ACE2 receptor, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Anyway, I looked that up, and I did learn that ivermectin could be used for it because I kind of figured it out. So before it was ever across the news or before anybody talked about it, I had all of my friends order a tube. Like, you know, you've got to get this. And a friend of mine, she used it when she had C19. And when she was done, she told me that she felt better than she could ever remember feeling. And of course she did, because it didn't just help her body fight the C19. It helped her body get rid of parasitic infections and, you know, other viral infections that may have been going on in her body that her immune system was suppressing. So, you know, hearing her tell me that she felt better than she had ever felt really was nice, you know, to hear, because I use it and I know that I do feel better after using it. I know that you can go to, there's a pharmacy in India that Dr. Klinghart recommends. Dr. Klinghart is a Lyme doctor. He recommends as well. I'm trying to remember the name, but it's a little overpriced, and, you know, I'll get my paste for $12 or $7 or whatever, and I'd rather use it topically than have it go through my body and have to break down and deal with fillers and, you know, like you were talking about with the SLS, you know.
Yeah.
You don't know what the fillers are, and you don't know if.
Well, right here you can just go get it at the food store.
Yeah. You know, here it was a little harder to get it at the feed store, but I absolutely advocate keeping some of that on hand. Just, you know, you start to feel a little wrong. You know, you start to feel like you're coming down with the flu or something, just use some ivermectin. That's what I do. Although I did, because nothing can survive a sustained fever of 104. It's very difficult for fungal, parasitic, and bacterial infections to survive a sustained 104 fever. So, I tried to get the flu in 2017, and I couldn't do it. And I just
stopped short of licking Walmart shopping carts. But, you know, but yeah, I really was actually trying to get the flu. And it was a lot harder than I thought. And my vitamin D levels were low. I was eating a lot of sugar. I was really trying. And I just couldn't get it. And the only thing I could think of is, you know, I got the flu every year as a kid. So all of those years of gaining natural immunity, which works for cross strains, that maybe I just had some kind of immunity to whatever flu going around at the time because I tried.
Well,
because
people
I'm that
with
person.
COVID was the type of virus it was. The people that especially had colds a lot when they were around those types of viruses had better immunity to COVID than other folks. So
yeah, of course.
Some of the colds were actually giving people that had them over time, obviously, natural immunity, some natural immunity
yeah.
to that.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, they're all coronaviruses.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, of course, you know.
They're not, obviously, they're not the exact same viruses, but they're very close. And so there's that,
right.
what you called it, some cross immunity there. So.
Yeah.
And
you
then
know,
if you look on what they give cattle, and your dogs, they'll give your pets and your livestock a coronavirus vaccine. And when that first came out, I thought, well, if they're pushing these vaccines, why don't they just go down? And I was just kind of joking, but I mean, if you got a coronavirus and you've had coronaviruses before, because there's several types of coronaviruses that cause colds, you know. You get some kind of natural immunity from that.
Yeah. You know, I will be very honest. I set out to get COVID because I am that person. I wanted to get it because I wanted to get it. I wanted to get it over with so I could have natural immunity. My kids had it. We had the hydroxychloroquine at home. So, you know, my youngest didn't even need it. My oldest, she has a prescription for hydroxychloroquine too, because she and I have rheumatoid arthritis. So, you know, we had the medication. So, but my youngest one was just fine with quercetin, C, D, and zinc. Because, you know, quercetin is a zinc ionosphore, just like ivermectin is. You know, ivermectin is a zinc ionosphore, and so is hydroxychloroquine. So, you know, it aids in the transport of zinc to your red blood cell. And, you know, that's good to know. Trying to think, N-acetylcysteine also helped people with C19 as well, which, you know, it downregulates into glutathione in some people. This is like all I read about. this is my life. This is me being not well enough to be in the workforce, but well enough to read. So it's absolutely nothing for me to spend the time I wake up until the time I go to sleep learning about different genes or supplements or what it does. This is it's just fun stuff.
Well, how long does your show usually go? We've been on
for
really
11, but But I know it's getting late, so if you need to go, you can, you can go anytime.
No, I just didn't know. I didn't know how long it was, so I was just curious. So
yeah, it goes until 11. Guests can stay as long as they like. You know, we didn't have anyone else on, and you know, just I guess it was, I think it was around the same time that I messaged you that I found out that, you know, Proof asked me if I would do the first hour or so of the show. And then, you know, he said, well, it might be an hour and a half. And I said, you know what, just don't hurry. I got it. we'll have a show. And then I messaged you, and I'm just like, you know what, why not? Oh, why the heck not?
Yeah.
You know, because there's always interesting questions to ask, like, I wanted to know what the difference was between, teaching the kids in different areas and in college. And are you still coaching football?
No, I gave that addiction up a long time ago.
You should, I noticed our mutual LinkedIn friend, you should ask him about when I worked with his basketball team.
Kind
of laugh.
Well, was that why you were still in high school?
No. Actually, what I did is I went in, because his team was, I became
a... This was like a rec team, or what kind of team?
No, it was his basketball team. So I became a hypnotist back in 2008. I got my license in on February 1st, 2008. So I spent a lot of money and spent a lot of hours to learn how to help people stop eating so much, alter their eating habits, or help them sleep. So I have a little download I made in 15 minutes that I still give out, and it helps people sleep. I learned how to one of the things I learned how to was to help somebody improve their golf. Okay. Around a golf.
Wow.
And, you know, I worked with a few friends, and it worked, okay? So he had a basketball team, and these boys were losing by a couple of points. So anytime you've got a team losing a game by, marginal points, 2, 3, 5 points, you're not dealing with a skill issue. It's in their head. It's a mental block.
Yeah.
There's something going on where they're subconsciously set, doing something to make them lose, because when games are mentality. So, I went in and I did guided meditation is really all I did is, I brought them into a very peaceful place where they could concentrate, and where if they ever felt that they were out of control in their life, or if they ever needed to sleep, or if they ever needed to really relax, they could take some deep breaths in and breathe it out. They could regain their calm. And, that's a good skill set for anybody to have. So these are young high school basketball kids, and I know he put the fear of God in them before I came in. They were very nice, and they were very respectful. But I
so who are we talking about? Because I was thrown off there for a minute. I was thinking about somebody else. I worked with him at Bell's.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
Yeah, you did.
He was the basketball coach when I was. Yes. Okay.
Okay. So.
I know who you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's our mutual on LinkedIn, by the way, because I looked you up. Because I wanted to make sure I had your title correct, Dr. Esri. So, but I worked with those boys, and that was, I brought them into that nice, peaceful place. And I also wanted them to be able to do it, because if they get into that place before they take a test, your likelihood of memory recall would be greater. Okay? So I wanted to teach them something that they could use for the rest of their lives, no matter what they did. So I would lead them, you know, I'd ask them, okay, well, you know, what happened? And let's talk about somebody's strengths and where are your strengths and you know, what can you do to overcome these weaknesses? And, you know, I figured it out, guided meditation, you know, said things like, you know, you're going to feel a great sense of pride. I would lead them through the game, where they would win and how they felt, so they could capture that joy and that feeling of winning the game. We started winning games. And there was this one boy, and I went to one of the games, and I did this before they went out on field. Well, there was this one boy, he would do slam dunks in practice, but he wouldn't do it on the field. All right. And, you know, just as I brought them in the first 10 minutes after you're brought out of this beautiful state, it's the same state you're in when you are going to sleep, when you're halfway awake or when you first wake up or when you're going to sleep, or anyway, it's that beautiful, glorious kind of hazy state. It's a really...
Yeah, I call it the in-between.
Yeah, and that's really what it is. And so anyway, I would bring them there. And just when they would come up, I just remember looking at him and just pointing at him and saying, dunk it. And so, you know, I'm like, you boys are going to do great. I believe in you. You know, y'all are awesome. You know, went out and, you know, was watching this basketball game. And sure enough, he got right there and he dunked the ball, and everybody in the stands stood up and just, you know, were loud and screaming, and just the look on his face of, oh my gosh, I did this, and that sense of self-pride and that feeling of the instant confidence booster that he got from that feeling of, oh my gosh, I can really do this. But his face, the look on it, I'll never forget the look on his face. And so for the rest of the game, he kept slam dunking, and you know, of course they won, and I think they ended up going off to finals or something. You know, I know they went a lot further because they started winning games. And this kid started slam dunking. I think a couple of them got scholarships. I mean, it was a really kind of a big deal. I had a blast doing it. And I'm like, you know, I want to do it. I want to do this just because I think I can.
Yeah. Well, it's almost 10:30. It's not past my bedtime, but I was going to go shopping. My brother had open heart surgery here a while back, and then because he doesn't have anybody really to help him, he was going to be in rehab until he got better, and rehab he's gotten worse, which doesn't surprise me. But anyway, he's got fluid around his heart right now, so I'm going to go down. I'm going to be back in Texas tomorrow, I think. And so,
I'm sorry to hear that about. Now, the fluid around the heart, is that myocarditis, or do they know what the condition is?
Well, I think it's because I don't know for sure because I haven't talked to him, but I want to go down and because this rehab is just milking his insurance, basically. And so I think it's because they have not done what they're supposed to do. He was better before because when he had open-heart surgery, he was on the cardiology floor for a couple of days, and they had him already up walking and that kind of thing. When they got to rehab, he can't even walk now. And they only they only do like 3 hours a day, and he lays in the bed for, you know, 21 hours. And so anyway, I'm going to go down there and just see what's going on and see if I can talk to his cardiologist because his cardiologist is back on the case, and he's going in to drain the fluid around his heart tomorrow and put a chest tube in. So I want to go down there and see if I can figure something out and make sure he doesn't go back into this rehab, the same type of rehab. And
wonderful. Everybody needs an advocate on their side
so,
when they're in a situation like that.
So I was going to
what did I
miss?
I got kicked off, which, you know, happened a little earlier. I usually get kicked off the air a few times.
Oh. So are you off now?
Yeah, I'm back on.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to.
Because I lost you there for a second. I thought something happened, but I lost you for a second.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go out and get some gas in my car ahead of time, and I've got to go I've got a meeting at my school tomorrow just for talking about maybe teaching a different class, and so then I'm going to head back down that way. So, and I'll let you have the last 30 minutes of the show without me on here.
I've really enjoyed reconnecting with you, and but I was hearing something about someone with fluid around his heart.
Say that again?
Is that right? Now, you were talking about someone with the fluid around his heart.
Yeah, it's my brother.
Okay.
And so he's going to get that taken off tomorrow, and he's going to be in ICU for a couple of days, so I want to be down there and see what's going on.
I'll probably message you about that.
Okay.
Because there's some stuff I learned from Dr. Fleming about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He does heart
I think
surgery.
A lot of it. Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the bad rehab and him just laying in the bed.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on with that. So, but thank you for coming on.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
Yes, it was wonderful to hear from you. So luck in all your teaching endeavors.
Well, thank you. And I've been through Utah a few times. My mom's from Washington, and so we used to go out that way all the time. We'd drive through the northern part, though.
Right. Yeah, that's typical.
We started going out there back in the old days because I'm so old. Before the interstate systems were before they were completed. So we went part interstate and part back roads when there wasn't any interstate, which would be the back roads today if they still exist. So anyway, but it's been a while since I've been out that way.
Well, yes, it was great to hear from you, and hopefully all things go well with your brother. So best of luck in everything.
Well, thanks.
Yay.
And I'll let y'all have at it. And I'm probably going to run up and get some gas. All right, see y'all. Thanks.
Oh, yeah.
Night.
All right, bye-bye.
Wow. Super awesome.
Is that the first time you've talked to him since your school days, or have you guys had a chance to catch up before that?
We spoke for a little while yesterday.
But yeah, that was kind of the first time we got to catch up. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah. Sounds like he's a good guy.
Yeah, you know what, he really was, you know, there's the teachers that you have in your life that stay with you forever, that you learn from, and he was definitely one of them. And I stay in touch with my old homemaking teacher because, of course, I do. I was an officer. Why wouldn't I? She, I took a college-level design class from her. Mm-hmm. And when her home ec class was discontinued by the school, she went and got her real estate license. And she walked into money she probably never imagined she would have. Because everybody knows her. Everybody loves her. And she knows how to stage a home.
Huh. Well, nice.
Yeah, that's not a bad skill to have, you know.
For sure.
I know that's something I'm going to brush up on as I continue to get my license in Texas. Because we're one of the few places that are still experiencing a boom. Are y'all getting a big wave in Utah right now?
Yes, especially in the more metropolitan areas. We have seen exponential growth, especially over the last probably 5 years. But, I mean, definitely every empty space now is being filled with new subdivisions. And in my area, we're considered maybe some of the more expensive homes going up. And so there's a lot of concern that they're going to have all these new homes and not enough people who can afford to buy them. But we've seen a huge influx of Californians, and I think they are the ones who are able to purchase these enormous multi-million dollar homes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we're at that level now.
They are here in Texas. And for one thing, I'll say this, what I learned in the last election, they were more likely to vote Republican than the native Texans were. And that's not what people would think. But, you know, they're escaping California. They're escaping California. And, you know, California's got a really interesting system where, you know, it's the top two on the ballot, not the top Republican and the top Democrat, but the top two. So you may have to, you know, when you go to an election, it may be, okay, well, which Democrat am I going to vote for? So, you know, a lot of some of the most vocal activists we have here in Texas are former Californians. The thing that California did when they had the mandate is it is, of course, California. So they baked cookies. They, you know, held hands and sang kumbaya. And, you know, we're sending well wishes that SB 277 and SB 276 wouldn't pass. Well, you know, yeah, we bake cookies all day long. You know what? That doesn't compete with the money they're getting from the pharmaceutical mafia. So when we had Jason Biaba, who was trying to mandate the measles vaccine, I will give Jackie Schlegel this. She tried to talk to him, and I was in his district. She tried to talk to him. He wouldn't talk to her. She has vaccine-injured child. And she just decided on that day, on the steps of the Capitol, she created Texans for Vaccine Choice. I was in the, we were the proud parents of unvaccinated children, Texas, which is no longer a group now because, you know, some trolls and whatnot, you know, But quite a bit of us stick together anyway. But I remember when it was born, when it was created right then. And I remember signing up and becoming a member. And so instead of baking cookies, we just went after their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, okay, you know what? You really think you're going to push these vaccine bills? Oh, okay, well, you know what? Your opponent is about to have, you know, 10,000 people block walking for him for free. How's that going to go?
Right.
So that's kind of how it works. And in Texas right now, you know, because of the work they've done, you know, they do the politics stuff. And that's, you know, I wouldn't want to wade in that. That's like wading in, well, I wouldn't want to wade in that. That's just not good. You know, I'm with Texas Medical Freedom Alliance. We're about education and letting people know, and we're about education. You know, Dr. Sheila Ely's got her doctorate in education. So, you know, she's our president and founder of Texas Medical Freedom Alliance. But Texans are vaccine choice. Yeah, there are people that will no longer decide to put up a vaccine bill. Because we don't bake cookies.
Right.
So big
well,
or go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, Texas is known for that. So you just took the words out of my mouth. Now, which area, which area of Texas are you in?
I'm in Dallas.
Which town?
Dallas.
Oh, okay. You're straight up.
Yeah,
right
everybody
there.
Here is pretty.
In the middle of all the things.
Everybody in Dallas is actually really pretty. It's a very pretentious city. People are beautiful. Mm-hmm. The city is beautiful. We get voted as the most beautiful skyline pretty much every year.
Nice.
That's
awesome.
It's very different than, say, Fort Worth. I always like to read articles. There was an article written in some magazine. It was like a British magazine about Dallas, but it basically was only about the stereotypes. Like, oh, look, hey, did you know JFK was shot here? You know, oh, really? Fort Worth, our next door neighbors, you know, and if you come to Dallas, you're either a Dallas person or a Fort Worth person. Fort Worth is like so Texas and so down to earth, and they really do have a cattle drive at noon every day in their stockyards, which is kind of downtown, and it's real nice, and people are real laid back, just real chill. You know, and Austin is just really urban and tech forward, you know. But Dallas is the number one city in the United States for, you know, starting your own business, for doing your own thing. This is number one for entrepreneurship. A lot of great companies come out of Dallas, you know. A lot of people in my, you know, I lived on Greenville around the same time Cuban did, and he goes to my gym. So, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of that, like, it's like a small town kind of thing, but it got really big. You know, Austin has grown massive. San Antonio has just exploded, and San Antonio, the food is so good. Oh my gosh, man. Go to San Antonio to eat, and the weather's nice, and the Alamo is small, but you've got to remember the Alamo. And Houston is like an armpit because it's super sweaty, it's super muggy, and it's also really hot. But people I love are there, so I go to Houston, you know, any chance I get. But, you know, Texas is just made up of
you know, all of our bigger, all of our sizable cities, they could all be their own state, you know. And just in the DFW Metroplex alone, it takes 13 counties. And some of those counties are bigger than Rhode Island. Our airport's bigger than the size of Manhattan Island. So, yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, we do know Texas as being the big state with all the big things, so that doesn't surprise me that you have counties that are bigger than states. So
Rhode Island? Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I have a friend who just moved to Texas, and I cannot for the life of me right now remember which big city she's near, but I would love to connect her with you, and I might suggest she sends you a friend request. She was very active. Awesome. She was very active with the Your Health Freedom movement here in Utah. So that's Kristen Chevrier, who we both know.
Her.
That's her group, and so I've been on the board of that organization. And then here in Southern Utah, we have Your Health Freedom Dixie, and I'm on the board for that as well. And when my friend who just moved to Texas was in Northern Utah, we attended a lot of the rallies and such, especially during the stupid madness of 2020.
Right.
And stood on the governor's mansion's lawn. He has a mansion of sorts downtown Salt Lake City, and out in the heat. And when you mentioned you love to just be out working in the heat, I am the same way. One of the reasons why we wanted to move to Southern Utah, we have 105, 107 degrees coming up this week, and
nice.
You know, I'm out in the sun a lot, and I love it. And here it's a dry heat. It sounds like it is for you as well, where you're at. More of a
it's humidity. We have humidity.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay. Got it. So it just keeps you detoxed, I feel
pretty
like.
Pretty much,
the sun, yeah. The sun is actually quite good for you, and it does not cause skin cancer. If anybody's listening, do not blame the sun for your skin cancer. You can blame the toxins that you've been putting on your body. So,
you know,
yeah, go out in the sun.
Everybody I've spoken to that has skin cancer used Tide detergent. Just thought that was really
interesting.
I asked people, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, I won't use, you know, I won't use sunblock either. I'd rather fry, honestly. You know, and I eat a lot of watermelon, and I, you know, try to stay high like a bean, but we do get really strong sun here. You know, but I do, when I meet somebody with skin cancer, I just say, you know, well, you have to think about what you've put on your body. What's touched your skin? What laundry detergent do you use? Because it doesn't all wash out.
Absolutely. So you've got the toxins from all your detergents and your skincare products and the sunscreens and the soaps and all the petroleum products that a lot of people use, and women are especially prone to that sort of thing because, you know, women wear makeup and perfume and it's just, you know, nail polish and all those things that obviously soak into our skin. So it's always great to, you know, make sure that you're going barefoot outside, getting that grounding, and, you know, staying out under the shade, maybe in the peak sun of the day. But it's important to get some of that sunlight. That's how we get our vitamin D. And no matter how many supplements you take, your best form of vitamin D is what your body produces. And that's, of course, triggered by your sun exposure.
Yeah. And you shouldn't be wearing sunglasses either.
True.
You know?
True. I
agree.
Because
you need that stimulation with your eyes.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, I look forward to meeting her. You know, Texas is massive, huge, but you know, it's really big. And I could probably end a sentence right there. It's just really huge. But, you know, traveling within the state of Texas doesn't seem like such a big deal, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, I wanted to go visit a friend in San Antonio because she's having a baby. Okay, cool. All right, well, that's 4 hours away, but it's still in Texas. So, yeah, I'd absolutely drive to San Antonio for that.
Right.
You know?
Makes sense.
You know,
yeah, it's just a connector. So look for a friend request from Becky McAllister, and I will suggest that you two become friends, and it would be good for her. They moved there. Her husband is in the military, and he was stationed. And so she has very few friends at this point, and I would love to get her some people.
If
it's not you or friends of friends of yours, somebody that she can, that she has something in common with. She just had twins. She has twin boys, and she would love to have some and health conscious and
she probably
more
wants
in that
to know where the good doctors are. You know?
Probably, yes. And, I would agree. Yeah, she's definitely more, she's selective. And when you were talking about having a child at 41, she had her children at that age as well. So she's a wise mother who's really looking out for the health of her children. So when one of her twins had some skin condition, she treated it with, of course, breast milk and some homeopathy, and all is well, and he's doing fine. So she is on board with all the good, healthy things.
I think that's awesome. You know, I used homeopathy in my last pregnancy, which shocked me because it knocked out my morning sickness. It worked.
Awesome. It's incredible.
Blown away, you know, and my little one, you know, when she would start to get the separation anxiety, I would keep Ignacia Amara, I'm probably saying it wrong, but I kept that on the counter, and she would point to that when she would start to get overwhelmed and she would feel, you know, some separation anxiety or, you know, she would point to
it. She knew.
Yeah, and you know what? When her teeth were hurting, she would point to the arnica. She did.
That's amazing. Wonderful. That's, you know, children are very intuitive. We don't give them enough credit for them understanding what they need. And that reminds me, I meant to mention to your, I can't remember his name now. I'm so sorry. Your teacher friend
Dr.
that you had on tonight. Okay, thank you. Yes, thank you. If you would like to pass on this message to him for me, I'm an herbalist and a homeopath, and I actually do get herbs wholesale. If he would like some kratom shipped to his house, I would be willing to do that. I realize it's not legal in his town, but that doesn't stop me from shipping whenever, wherever I want. So I get a wholesale deal if he wants something more. So you don't have to buy small amounts. If he wants a bigger stockpile of that wonderful herb, I would love to send it to him. So if you wouldn't mind passing that on, that would be wonderful.
You know, well, I'm pretty sure he has a way where you could ship it into Oklahoma, and there you go.
Yeah.
I know he's got people in Oklahoma you could have it shipped to. So, you know, that keeps you in the clear and, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm not concerned about that at all. It's completely protected in Utah at this point, and shipping is very basic and indiscreet, I should say, when it comes to things like herbs. So, and I ship them all over the place all the time, so I have no troubles with that. But if he doesn't want to drive over the border and get some, I would be happy to hook him up with that. So,
I'll definitely let him know because I'll send him a message about that. And you know, it was really interesting to hear, you know, things about his wife, and I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'd like to connect him with Dr. Jim Mann. I don't know if you've heard Dr. Mann speak, but,
sure,
you know, you know, he is right there in Tulsa. And,
oh, nice.
You know, I was like, okay, hold on, you know, who are some doctors I can connect you with? Because, you know, they tend to go more holistic. And, okay, well, you know, I think everybody needs an activist friend, honestly,
yeah,
and a friend that uses herbs. And that's really wonderful that you're an herbalist. I've been so wrapped up in my life stuff lately that I really haven't been meeting the newer members of you know, of the Freedomizer Station, but I'm really glad to meet. I really think that, you know, maybe Proof should take some nights off every once in a while and leave us the show. You know, so how long have you been?
Yeah.
How long have you been the co-host on Wednesdays?
Let's see, we're going on probably about 2 months now. I'm trying to remember. So somebody was co-hosting on Wednesday and moved to Monday, and that's when I came in on Wednesday, whatever time period that was. I want to say it's been at least 2 months, maybe a little more. So school wasn't out yet, so it was probably in April. And yeah, so it's been a few. I get familiarized with the whole process and get my feet under myself. And, you know, I've been interviewed many times, but never have been the host or the co-host of any kind of program before. So that was new to me, which was a little nerve-wracking at first, but here we are. We're okay. And all
you know, you just get used to, you know, I came on as a guest because I do predictions. And, you know, I predicted Harvey, and I, you know, I just did some predictions just for a change of pace, because that did not necessarily fall in line with what his guests were like. And I made a bunch of predictions, and they came true. And I remember I made a personal prediction for him, and about 3 weeks later, I get a phone call. Like, hey, what you said came true. I was like, yeah, I know. I mean, like, I'm not surprised here. This stuff happens all the time. It was really interesting. So, you know, I kept coming on, and I actually got my own show, and I still have my own show. I just really haven't done anything with it because I've just been kind of busy.
Right.
No.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm sure that once things start to come together, you can get more settled after all is said and done. You can step back into it and be better than ever, more experienced and wiser than ever.
And it's on Tuesdays in the time slot before you know, because I'm the co-host on Tuesday night. So I took the time slot before, so it would be like 6 hours with me, like road trip.
Yeah, wow. There you go.
Yeah,
it was. I had no idea it existed until I met Proof on Facebook with his Barefoot is Legal organization in 2020. That's how he and I connected. I'm a barefoot kind of girl, and when they started saying that, you know, masks fall under the category of no shirts, no shoes, no service, I, of course, was against that. I've never put a mask on my face. I was never going to. And then when I met him through Facebook, I said, see, you can't put that in the – that doesn't even apply. So, yeah, none of all these things you're trying to force on us here in the grocery store are illegal. So it's just –
oh, my God.
Yeah. But I guess we're almost our time is almost up, correct? Am I looking at the clock? We're almost at the hour.
Yeah, we've got 2 minutes and 14 seconds left. So is there anything you want to promote?
Oh, no, I was just really fascinated in listening to your guest and just the interaction that you two had, and it sounds like he's a great teacher and he's got some dang lucky students. I know that teaching is a whole different scenario now, and it is very much becoming time for people to homeschool. So I heard you say you homeschool, and I just wanted to applaud you for that. Awesome.
That's a source of what I'm going through right now. That's one of those trigger points where it's being brought up, and it's
because anytime you can throw that in somebody's face and try to get sympathy on that end,
I'm an anti-vaxxer, so I've got that going
exactly
too.
Yes, exactly. And that's why it's better that you're in Texas, because Texas, if I remember correctly, they are definitely more open in general as far as statewide government to alternative, if you want to call it that, or original ways of raising your children. So I think that's wonderful that you're on that homeschool path and keeping your children vaccine. Sister was vaccine injured in the 1950s, and she was mentally handicapped until she drowned at the age of 22. And it's just, to me, it just shows that it's been an ongoing thing. So, time to everyone to understand that. So, that's all I wanted to say at the end here.
Okay, well, thanks, y'all, for listening in. It's been a great time, and I guess we're done. Have a great night, everyone.
Night.
All right, good night. Yes.
Hey, see ya.